Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, folks? It is Tuesday, November 4th. We're heading into the second half of Sports Talk, and it's an abbreviated edition this evening at 7 p.m. We got the Saints Hour with the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas. We'll be joined by Kellen Moore, head coach, talking about the Rashid Shaheed trade, an exclusive interview with quarterback Tyler Shuck, and Panthers analyst and former QB Jake DeLome. That's all on the Saints Hour coming up next in 7 p.m. hour. Meanwhile, we're getting ready for Pelicans basketball. That is a 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip off over on 870 AM to help us break things down about the birds. Ali Cosell, NBA writer who covers the Pelicans. Man, Ali, how you been doing through this 0-6 start? You still surviving?
Yeah, look, I think everybody's a little dazed, right? Nobody expected an 0-6 start, right? I mean, the worst possible scenario, it's happened.
We got it.
And now you've got Zion Williamson out tonight, going to miss his second game with a hamstring issue, out at least a week. Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah, you mentioned the issue with Zion Williamson. Also, Eve Missy, we know, has an illness. He'll be out this evening. But with Zion, I mean, we've talked about how frustrating, disappointing it's been with seasons of him just spending more time on the shelf than on the court. Just once again, though, it looked like, you know, this season had the body frame looking leaner, slicker, seemed to be faster, more in sync, and gotten things under control. And we get news of a hamstring issue today that, you know, you're going to be reevaluated in 7 to 10 days, and then who knows what happens from there. So just overall, a really rough hole this Pel squad's in right off the gate here.
Yeah, look, this team is not without talent. And I thought in preseason, and even go back to training camp, heard a lot of positive things, how competitive it was. And so for them to come out, not only start 0-6, but in three of those games, just lose by 30 or more points, that's about as non-competitive as you can get. And that's exactly what Jude Dumars said we will not see this season, right? And here's the troubling thing. Last season, it was a very bad season, right? They only won 21 games, lost 61. They lost only 7 games by 30 or more points. The fact you've already lost 3 such games through 6 games this season, like I said, any which angle you look at the start of the season, it's just terrible.
You look at head coach Willie Green. Obviously, there's been a ton of hate, and, you know, everyone's bringing the torches, saying it's time to fire him. Are you surprised so far, though, that the organization looks like they're sticking with Willie right now, despite all these troubles that have been going on, and it continues? We see the same in every night. We know this third quarter collapse is going to happen, and that the team's going to end up losing by 10-plus, 15-plus points.
Yeah, I'm not entirely surprised. Look, because fans, they think that you can pretty much put maybe 95 or even 100% of this blame on Willie Green. And
right.
He definitely deserves probably the brunt of it, right? Because he's not getting through the players. The defense is a no-show. The offense looks very jagged. Almost no players are having any kind of years that they're proud of, outside of maybe even the rookie, Jeremiah Fears. So that does fall on Willie Green. But what I've got to say is, seems like the players should be held accountable here too. And I think that's what we're seeing out of management. Because look, you don't want to give the impression that you signed off when Joe Dumars came in here, signed off on Willie Green staying another year when everybody expected you to move on to a new head coach. So to do it after 6 games, that also screams kind of ineptitude, right? Lack of not knowing what you're doing. So I'm not surprised they're sticking with him. And then, like I said, the players, you got to hold them accountable. I thought that we saw something happen to this team. They could have won the first 2 games of the year. Then something happened in that fourth quarter of the Celtics game, and they just haven't recovered, right? They got destroyed by the Celtics to lose in a blowout fashion. Then since that time, they've looked terrible. And really, when you look at the players on the court, they're not bringing the effort, guys. They're really not. So just as much Willie's help, you know, you should hold accountable. I think these players are too, and that's what I think the front office is thinking. They're going to try and give him a chance, maybe another week or so, come out of his tailspin. But if they don't, yeah, I think everybody's expecting then that axe will fall on Willie.
You look at this team right now. You mentioned that effort, and they need to show something tonight against the Charlotte Hornets team that looks like a winnable game for you. Obviously, nothing is a given for this Pels squad right now, the way they've been performing out there. But we know that the Hornets come in. They're a hurting bunch, too. There's no LaMelo's not going to be playing. But this team, besides you mentioned that there's talent on this roster. The guys just need to find a way to ignite more of that want to out there.
This is a great opportunity to get your first win of the season. There's no doubt. Charlotte Hornets, they started the year 2-1, but since then have not won a game. They'll be without LaMelo Ball. So this seems like a prime game, and I think even the odds makers are picking the Pelicans as favorites. So
wow.
Got to start without Zion. Trey Murphy, he's got to look like a number two guy, but unfortunately tonight he's going to have to act like a number one guy. Mm-hmm. But we saw him do that last season when, you know, guys were out of the lineup, yet he was able to go ahead and, you know, put together big games. He's going to have to do that tonight, get on track. We kind of saw his three-point shot start falling in that last game in OKC, so hopefully some of that will carry over. But then just the rest of the squad's going to have to pick it up. And you just want to see the intensity, right? I mean, I'm seeing such lapses defensively, and it's not just one player. Slew of players where they don't care to box somebody out. When they're playing in zone defense, somebody's just missing assignments because he's not paying attention to where he should be. It's simple things like that must be driving the coaching staff crazy. You want to see all those type of things clear up, and hopefully they will.
On a positive note, Ollie, yeah, we have been hearing a lot about the rookie in Jeremiah Fears, mm-hmm. who's already seems to be making himself throughout the NBA circles. Just overall, where do you want to see this guy, this young man, continue to grow in his game here?
Honestly, you don't want to put any pressure on him. I'm sure he's feeling it. He probably hates being 0-6 to start his NBA career. But the fact that he's able to go out there at that tender age, you know, he just turned 19 years old, and be able to actually make positive impacts, that's all you want to see, and you want for it to continue. I mean, against the Thunder, what did he hit? His first 2 3-pointers had a quick 8 points. He's now having some good back-to-back games with assists, so he's seeing the floor well. So you just, like I said, don't want to put too much shoulders. Just see what he is, because honestly, you know what he's shown us? He looks like he's going to be a special talent. Who knows how special, but I think what we're seeing is the Pelicans made a very good pick at number 7 in the last draft.
Ollie, I'm going to hop in here. Just wanted to ask you, like, looking ahead at the Pelicans' schedule in November, it doesn't lighten up by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
I know that there's a lot of home games thrown in there as well. A couple numbers from the first 6 games of the season that really jump off the page, negative light. Points per game allowed for the Pelicans, 125.8, mm-hmm. which ranks 28th in the NBA, only ahead of the Wizards and the Nets. The Nets are the only other winless team in the NBA so far this year. And then field goal percentage defense, 50.9 for the Pelicans this year, which is 29th, only above the Nets. Once again, the only other winless team in basketball right now. When the Pelicans brought in Willie Green, his defensive acumen was what he was known for, and getting players to play hard on that side of the ball. And Ollie, I know that you said it's not just on Willie, it's on the players as well, but it just feels like there's no intensity defensively. And coming into the season, you might have seen the roster and you see the talent offensively, and there were some questions defensively, but it's been worse than I think any of us expected.
It is, because I thought in preseason we saw some defense, right? You saw Zion stealing the ball left and right. You saw much greater intensity. You saw the Pelicans hold their own on the glass against two of the biggest teams in the league in Orlando and Houston. And so then you have these two first games of the regular season. They were competitive, right? Super competitive, especially on the glass again. But that has slipped. And you're right. They haven't allowed less than 120 points to any opponent. That's terrible. You're not competing really on the glass. You're not competing really anywhere. Right? I mean, Denver ran layup lines when they were out there playing the Nuggets last week. That's just not allowed. Right? That's just not acceptable. You have to give at least some effort. You at least have to have some wherewithal. And the fact they haven't had any, that's what's troubling, right, these last 4 games largely. And I've got to think, guys, I feel like when Willie removed Jordan Poole from the starting lineup, Jordan Hawkins suddenly jumped out of the rotation, and you're just 3 games into the season. I think that kind of reverberated through the locker room, right? I think that's had some effect. So what I'm wondering is, can they recover from that? Are they still listening to Willie Green enough to where, like I said, you can win tonight, maybe get something going at least mildly to you steady the ship? But if it doesn't, then yeah. I mean, I think the writing's going to be on the wall. He's going to be given maybe another handful of games before. If you don't turn things around, we're going to be talking about a new head coach, and maybe he can coax out some intensity out of these guys, because they're not bringing it for 48 minutes, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, that was my kind of follow-up here, Ali, is how long really is the leash? Because like I said, this upcoming slate, you have the Hornets tonight. Tomorrow you go to Dallas and face the Mavericks, who are off to a slow start in their own right. But then, I don't even want to dive into the games in November. Let's just say they're tough. You have a couple of NBA Cup games against the Lakers. You play the Warriors. You play the Nuggets again. You play the Thunder again. You play all these really good teams in the Western Conference in their upcoming basically next 15 games. So really, how long is the leash here? Because, Ali, you know as well as Steve and I do, this was a season where you had to win as many games as possible after moving on from your first-round pick for next year, and just starting 0-6 and looking uncompetitive in half of the games that you've played, as you had mentioned, the leash has got to be getting tight.
It is, and I think they're going game by game, especially tonight. Say the Pelicans get blown out tonight, this might be, honestly, Willie Green's last game. If he can get a win, they'll probably extend it for at least through the road trip, you've got to think, right? It's a three-game road trip, and then they'll reevaluate. Because I will say that after the first two games of the season, when the Pelicans were competitive, could have beaten the Grizzlies, could have beaten the Spurs, there was already some talk behind the scenes about this team might be moving on from Willie Green very soon. And like I said, those were two kind of competitive losses for the Pelicans. So to hear it back then, and now to see what's transpired since, yeah, this leash is ultra short.
Ali, always appreciate the time, man, and hopefully, well, at least has as much rocking as the Smoothie King Center can be on a Tuesday. Hopefully they show up for the fans that are in attendance, and the Pels can notch that first victory taking on this Hornets squad tonight. Thanks so much for the time.
Yep. Take care, guys. Thank you.
Ali Cosell joining us, covering the Pelicans, the NBA writer. You can always check out his work. Follow him at Ali Cosell. Man, Charlie, just 0-6 right now. You kind of get to the point where you're just aggravated, and you're not embarrassed anymore. It's just, like I said, anger towards this team right now. It's like, how dare you do this, and that I'm watching it.
Yeah, you know, there was hope entering the season with the talent on the roster, and it's just, it feels at times that they've quit on Willie, Steve, where they're just getting bludgeoned in these games. Like, non-competitive, as what Ali said, is correct. 3 30-point losses in six games a season. I know the level of competition is what it is, but if you're supposed to be winning games, at least be making some of them close. And then you have the game against the Clippers where Kawhi Leonard just hits a dagger at the very end, buzzer beater to kind of break
your
hearts.
They did show at least fight in that game, but yeah, you just got the dagger thrown at you by, like you said, Kawhi at the end.
And it just, the hits keep coming with the Zion Williamson news that he's going to be out at least 7 to 10 days with a hamstring strain.
Yep.
The hamstrings have been an issue for Zion throughout his career. And even though he comes into the season and looking in better shape, everyone's all excited, the hamstring strain pops up basically a week or so into the season, and now he's going to be at least out for the next week and a half.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk on 105.3 FM over on 870 AM, 630. Pre-game coverage of the Pelicans taking on the Hornets. It's a 7 o'clock tip-off in the Smoothie King Center. Tune in for that. The big 870 AM. We'll have that for you coming back with more Sports Talk right after this on WWL. Folks, nothing gets the dome louder than when the Falcons come to town. Saints fans, let's pack the Caesars Superdome, bring that noise, and beat Atlanta. You can win tickets to the Saints' next home game against the Atlanta Falcons. Score two premium tickets plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. We're talking an open bar, premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, and that's all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Go to WWL.com/contest. Enter one time every day for your chance at Saints Falcons tickets from Saints Radio, WWL. Coming back with more, doing our fantasy focus right after this. Stay tuned on WWL Radio.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up and welcome back into Sports Talk here on WWL, folks. Getting into our fantasy focus now. Joe Bartle, fantasy football expert at RotoWire, joining us. It was the NFL trade deadline today. So that's approaching, I feel like, in many of the fantasy football leagues as well. Are you getting ready for trade deadline time? Are you prioritizing getting some of those guys who have some favorable matchups at the end of the season?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't normally do that yet. I mean, I play in 17 leagues, so I think often the idea is let's just get by week, and I think especially this year, with as many injuries as we've had to top people, I would think that a lot of people are in the boat of, well, if one or two bad things go wrong, I'm not looking at the playoffs, I'm just trying to make it in. So normally for me, when I start planning for that is week 12 of the NFL season. And maybe that's frankly too late. Maybe people are already trying to do that if you're in a blessed roster enough spot to go and do it. But week 12 is typically when I feel comfortable saying, okay, here come fantasy playoffs to say week 16 or week 15, 16, 17. Then I normally have a good idea of what those defenses will look like. And, you know, after everything that happened today, it's arguable that there's a bunch of teams that got significantly worse that we wouldn't have thought that as well too. So there is still moving data points where I don't necessarily go ahead and say, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and commit to trading for what I think will be playoff difference makers in a month and a half.
Joe, I think this past week was maybe on the Mount Rushmore of disastrous matchup for a single position that I've ever had playing fantasy football, and I've been doing this for quite a while. I had Tucker Kraft, and Tucker Kraft has been awesome for me all season long, and I'll get to the question regarding him in just a second. And my opponent had Brock Bowers, where Brock just – and it feels like with the move that you know, Jacoby Myers gets moved on at the trade deadline for the Raiders. Brock Bowers could be one of those guys that's just going to go nuts for the final month of fantasy football season. But he started it off this past week going for about 45 points. And then Tucker Kraft, who's been outstanding all season long, torn ACL out for the year. So my question for you is, you know, for guys that have really leaned on Tucker Kraft this season at the tight end position, is there any hope? I know that in my league specifically, Colson Loveland's available. He had a really nice performance against Cincinnati, but how much of that is really Cincinnati's defense being absolutely horrible? I just want to get your thoughts on the tight end spot for Tucker Kraft owners like myself that are just in shambles right now.
Yeah, and as a Packer fan, I would argue that it was even a worse Sunday for me as well after losing the Panthers. And then watching the only fun thing about our offense out for another year. Yeah, I'm with you. So I think the first part I want to make sure everyone listening understands, Luke Musgrave is not the answer. So Luke Musgrave was selected in the second round ahead of Tucker Kraft in the same draft. Musgrave is more liable. I wrote this in the WaveWire article. I can read on RotoWire right now, but Luke Musgrave is more liable to trip on the yard line as opposed to actually getting tackled by anybody, and certainly not a yak sort of threat the way that Tucker Kraft has been the entire year. If the Packers do things correctly, they're using Luke Musgrave in a completely different way. Now, it might still end up yielding something like 4 or 5 catches to 50 yards because they'll use Luke Musgrave as a field stretcher, but certainly not within the red zone, certainly not running a lot of screens for Luke Musgrave. That's just not – he's just not capable of doing that. So it's certainly a difficult spot because normally you'd say, all right, well, Tucker Kraft is so great, the Packers use the tight end position like X. They'll clearly use it like X with this new player. It doesn't happen that way, and it won't happen that way. To your point, though, I actually wonder if there's a decent amount of waiver wire tight ends available. Now, nobody to the degree of Tucker Kraft, of course, who was, like you had mentioned, I think a top three pennant for fantasy this year. But Mason Taylor was on a buy for the Jets. I know that they acquired A.D. Mitchell, which I think is interesting, but we know it takes a ton of chemistry and rapport to get on pace with the receiver. You'd think that A.D. Mitchell probably doesn't immediately become Justin Fields' favorite target outside of Garrett Wilson. So I still like Mason Taylor. Harold Fannin was on buy, the rookie tight end of the Browns. I like Harold Fannin as well, too. And you did mention Colson Loveland, which I think is a really key part of this, that yes, Loveland has been very disappointing this year. You're right. Everything that he did was because the Bengals' defense is so atrociously bad. However, Cole Kmet left that game with a concussion, and at least the assumption for me is that Cole Kmet will not play this week as well, too. All I'm doing now, if I have Tucker Kraft moving forward, is week by week trying to find the streamer game for tight end. Maybe it is just targeting the tight end against the Bengals every single week and seeing if that works for you. Maybe you just get by with Colson Loveland 1 week and see if it happens more so. But even your guy, Juwan Johnson, I think is actually a very interesting spot now with Rashid Shaheed out the door as well, too. So there are options, and it might not be nearly the level of attractiveness as Tucker Kraft, but I do think you can get by with low-end tight end one production off of waivers for the foreseeable future.
You know, you had mentioned A.D. Mitchell, Joe, and I wanted to ask you, because I have dynasty stock in him, and it's kind of deep dynasty stock. He was a very intriguing prospect to me entering the draft. And, you know, what happened with him with Indianapolis, where in that Rams game, he fumbles at the goal line, and then he picks up that critical holding penalty that calls back a long touchdown run for Jonathan Taylor. He's basically the reason that they lost in L.A. I don't want to pin it all on one player, but, I mean, he was basically in the doghouse from then on out. So him getting a fresh start in New York, where, like you had mentioned, Garrett Wilson is the top dog, and that's not changing anytime soon, but being able to be a number two to Garrett long term, I think it's actually an interesting trade that happened today, especially for folks that may have him in dynasty like myself.
Yeah, I would only say how fresh of a start is it when you're going to the Jets? Right? I mean, that's my only issue with it, but I totally agree. And for the Jets, like roster building perspective, love the idea. Like, it makes complete sense to go ahead and just roll the dice and see what you have on a guy that we thought was really talented, was a second-round pick for the reason a lot of people thought he fell in the draft, and the Colts got a lot of value taking him where they did. And I don't know. I did a breakdown on this over the past 5 years, mid-season trades, and I allowed it to kind of expand to, let's just say, Devonta Adams last year was the second week of October. I allowed that to be a mid-season trade as well, too. So there's a bit more than just here's the trade deadline ones. But it's really bleak for receivers. The only two examples from a fantasy perspective this year, or sort of the current year they were traded, that really I thought made a big difference fantasy-wise, was Emmanuel Sanders back in 2019 going for the Broncos to the 49ers. Of course, Emmanuel Sanders famously was overthrown on that pass from Jimmy Garoppolo. Probably could have won the Super Bowl for the Niners, but like Sanders was good during that time period. Devonta Adams was the other one, and he was going with his favorite quarterback to a situation where the Jets really didn't have anybody else besides May have Garrett Wilson be banged up. Like, it just is really, really tough for a new receiver to immediately become the top guy on this new situation, new team. And already the Jets quarterback situation is pretty bleak too. So dynasty, I don't mind buying low on an A.D. Mitchell. I have to imagine anyone who drafted him is probably like, well, I mean, it's a sunk cost anyway. Might as well just see what I have now that he's in a new spot. But redraft-wise, rest of the season, I'm not really overreacting to it and saying A.D. Mitchell, even in deep league, should be picked up.
Joe, I got to imagine that while Saints fans are a little sad the fact that Rashid Shaheed got traded to Seattle, any fantasy football owners of Rashid Shaheed have to be happy. He's entering the Seahawks offense. Clint Kubiak running the show, he was familiar with Shaheed last year in New Orleans and has a pretty good mate running aside him as his number one receiver in Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Just overall, what boost in value do you see Rashid Shaheed getting in fantasy now with the Seahawks?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be a wet blanket, but I kind of think he actually has a little bit less of fantasy value.
Really?
I was a little surprised that Rashid Shaheed was a volume player and as a pass catcher for the Saints offense this year. And I would imagine, and you guys frankly should tell me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine that's not the way that you should use Rashid Shaheed. Like, he's one of the fastest players in the league, that he's getting these 4-yard, 5-yard catches underneath. Like, just didn't make sense to me. I understood with the schematic differences of Spencer Rattler and now Tyler Shuck, but like, I would want it to be opened up a little bit more. And now you go to Seattle, where this offense is thriving at the moment, being able to throw deep as often as they are. I think this cuts in the Jaxon Smith-Njigba's value just slightly, but to me, again, talk about what we were saying earlier with mid-season trades happening, especially at receiver, you're acquiring Rashid Shaheed to take the top off the defense, to allow other things to happen. They're already using, I think, two tight ends, either the third or fourth most in the league currently, with Elijah Arroyo A.J. Barner, really, I think, thriving at the moment with that offensive scheme. So I think it's a really good move for a playoff team to make, and in the event that Cooper Kupp just cannot play at all, which frankly I thought entering the year, it's just a savvy move regardless, you're protecting yourself on every avenue. In the case Jaxon Smith-Njigba does get injured, if Torrey Horton ends up having some rookie woes, but I don't think Rashid Shaheed, and again, tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Rashid Shaheed is going to be getting enough volume in fantasy the way he was getting it in New Orleans this year.
No, I totally hear you on that. And looking at another one with this Saints squad right now, the offense has been struggling so much, and it's hard to even say right now, Joe, but is Alvin Kamara someone that I'm just leaving on my bench and only using in emergency circumstances right now?
Yeah, I think a lot of people outside of New Orleans are probably saying drop him in fantasy, and I think that's a little bit too hasty to say, but you're right. I don't know how you're supposed to play. Now, if we think Rashid Shaheed was basically an underneath target for this offense this year, and right or wrong, that was the way he was being utilized, And Chris Olave feels pretty much maxed out in the target capacity that he's getting, mm-hmm. and Juwan Johnson's maxed out in that sort of same vein too. Somebody has to accumulate that volume. You would hope it's Devon Vele, who you gave up draft picks for, kind of bewildering to begin the year. That hasn't necessarily happened. And Brandon Cooks, we love Brandon Cooks. I certainly do. I imagine you guys do as well. But he's a little bit on the advanced side of things, and I think he's kind of maxed out. So if there's one way in which I could see this happening for Alvin Kamara from a benefit perspective, it's that maybe he gets more underneath targets. You kind of have to scheme those, though. You can't really just use Alvin Kamara the same way you would have Rashid Shaheed functioning within that offense. And I would think, not that I'm an NFL play caller by any means, but I would think I would be doing that already if I had Alvin Kamara. He's one of the best in the league as a pass catcher, and that just hasn't happened this year. So I don't know what it is. It's been certainly frustrating as a guy that has loved Alvin Kamara for basically his entire career. It's very frustrating that we are kind of reside to this where you're right. I don't think I'd be recommending playing him if I have better options, that's for sure.
You know, Joe, my last one for you is Saquon Barkley coming off the bye week. I know he's been dealing with a groin issue at times throughout the season, but he has a huge game against New York in week 8, the bye in week 9, and then you have the stretch run, starts with Green Bay this weekend, and then Detroit, but then it becomes pretty favorable, especially once you get into fantasy playoff scheduling. Do you think that Saquon, who really kind of went on a hot streak late in the season last year fantasy-wise, could do the same again this year?
Yeah, I thought you were giving me another pack-related question. I'm like, come on, you've already kicked me when I'm down with Tucker Kraft. I dare you do this again with Saquon Barkley on Monday. So this would be more like a trade question, right? Where we're saying, hey, I'm like, would you look at acquiring Saquon Barkley? Because obviously, if you have Saquon Barkley, you're not looking to move him necessarily. Like you draft him, pick 5 or 8, whatever it was in that range, to basically play him in this spot. I think I have confidence that Barkley will be a first round caliber player where you were drafting him back in August. Do I think he's giving these pop off weeks that we saw against the Giants last week? No, I don't necessarily. I'm really concerned that I would almost just say the temperamental offense of Philadelphia. It seems to be like a whim week by week as to, oh, now we're going to have A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith involved because they were complaining. Now Saquon Barkley is going to be because it's against this former team. Like, I just would like there to be some identity within Philadelphia's offense, and I have not seen it, at least to the degree that we thought they were last year. And it feels just mind-boggling to me that we haven't really established that yet. So I'm nervous that you're not going to get 1-1 overall fantasy value in Saquon Barkley, but you can certainly feel very comfortable playing him, and I would not move him at all ahead of the postseason if you are kind of in that position fantasy-wise.
Joe, is your Week 10 Fantasy Football waiver wire up at rotowire.com right now for folks?
Yes, and I just got the Tuesday updates in, so Jack Besh, kind of the beneficiary of the Jacoby Myers trade in Las Vegas, and also kind of broke down Parker Washington, who I still think is a key pickup this week, too.
Awesome stuff, as always. Appreciate the time, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Bartle, the fantasy football expert at RotoWild, joining us weekly for our fantasy focus here on WWL. We're going to take a break, be back with more as we get ready for the Saints Hour coming up next. Stay tuned right here on WWL. As we wrap up this today's edition of Sports Talk Tuesday, November 4th, getting ready for the Saints Hour coming up next here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Saints moves today during the trade deadline. They traded wide receiver and return specialist Rashid Shaheed to the Seattle Seahawks, getting a 4th and 5th round selection in the 2026 NFL draft, and then sent offensive lineman Trevor Penning over to the Los Angeles Chargers, picking up another draft pick, this time, though, in the 2027th draft, and that being a 6th-rounder. You get more of trade talk and all things black and gold, like I said, coming up next in the Saints Hour with the voice of the Saints, Mike Hawes. I'm Steve Geller for Charlie Long. Folks, have a great evening. If you're looking for Pelicans basketball, that's over on 870 AM. They're about to tip off things against the Charlotte Hornets in the Smoothie King Center, folks. Keep it locked on to WWL for all your Saints, LSU, and Pelicans news. Coming back with more tomorrow, folks. Have a great night, everyone. Who dat?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.